1952, our proms anniversary composer Benjamin Britten heard a piece in which seven modern French composers had each written a variation on a theme by the 17th century composer Campra. Britten thought about doing a British version, and why not on a tune like Selinger's Round, which would be ideal for a new collective tribute to the new Queen Elizabeth. Imogen Holst, Lennox Barclay, Michael Tippett, William Walton, and now, 60 years after the coronation, the English Chamber Orchestra adds two new variations to that set. I'm Clemency Burton-Hill. Join me for a new take on an intriguing set of variations this afternoon at the BBC Proms from 3 o'clock.
This is BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. It's just after 1 o'clock. Time now for the news with Susan Ray.
The company operating a helicopter that crashed while carrying oil workers to Shetland from the Borgston Dolphin rig has suspended all operations of the Super Puma L2 helicopter. Four people died when the aircraft ditched into the North Sea yesterday evening. They've been named as Duncan Munro, who was 46 and from Bishop Auckland, Sarah Darnley, who was 45 and from Elgin, Gary McCrossan, who was 59 and from Inverness, and 57-year-old George Allison from Winchester. It's reported the aircraft suffered a sudden loss of power. It's emerged that there have been five serious incidents involving Super Puma helicopters in the UK during the past 5 years. The Unite Union has demanded a full investigation. The UN's most senior disarmament official, Angela Kane, has arrived in Syria to press for access to the site of a suspected chemical weapons attack. The regime of President Assad has refused to allow the UN inspectors into the area, where opposition activists say hundreds of people died. This morning, Syrian State TV said soldiers had found chemical agents in rebel tunnels, causing them suffocation. Funerals have been taking place in northern Lebanon for the victims of yesterday's bomb attacks in Tripoli. 42 people were killed in the explosions, which have raised fear that the civil war in Syria could provoke renewed sectarian strife in Lebanon. The authorities in Hong Kong have arrested more than 1,800 people in a crackdown on organised crime. Drugs and other illegal goods worth over £3 million have been seized during the month-long operation. Police in Northern Ireland have found a large quantity of guns and ammunition. The weapons were discovered during a security alert last night on the outskirts of East Belfast. Thousands of people are gathering in Washington to commemorate the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's "I Have a Dream" speech, a key moment in the civil rights campaign of the 1960s. Among the speakers are the parents of the black teenager, Trayvon Martin, who was killed in Florida last year. The weather: heavy rain will continue this afternoon across eastern parts of the UK before easing later. It'll be brighter in the west. BBC News and Weather at 1:03.
Read by Susan Ray. I'm Jill Anderson. A very good afternoon to you. It's time now for today's early music show. Here's Catherine Bott.
It's fair to say that no one has done more to revive the fortunes of the viola da gamba than Wieland Koken. He's internationally famous both as a player and as a teacher who's inspired generations. When he retired from his post at the Royal Conservatoire of Brussels, former students came from all over the world to his retirement party. That was 9 years ago, but he's still a busy performer, and he came to the 2013 York Early Music Festival along with viol player Asako Morikawa and harpsichordist Terence Charleston to demonstrate the expressive power of the virtuoso viol in a programme of French Baroque music.
Thank you.
a chaconne from the first collection of Pièces de Viol by Marin Marais, published in 1686. Wieland Kauken, let us begin right at the beginning, growing up with five brothers, and it was a musical household, wasn't it?
Not really. At my home, not so much, in fact. My mother played a bit of piano, like so many piano spielende Töchter, you see, in Germany.
Yeah. Yes, a nice thing for girls to do.
We had a piano from around 1900, and that's where we started to look up and to find some notes with a few fingers. That was the beginning for me.
But it seems from what I've read that the real exciting moment, tell me about making your fiddles at the Jugendhof Steinbach.
That's it, exactly. That was exciting, yeah. It was something completely new for us. We didn't know about
that,
it
That
at
was
all.
A course
that
in
was
Germany.
A course, but it's just a workshop. 1 week, and you come back with an instrument and a kind of a bow, and then you kind of play it. But we didn't have the slightest idea going there what it really was about.
So,
and we got home with an instrument tuned like a gamba already, with steel strings. So it was nice.
So of the six brothers, three particularly, you and Sigiswald
and Bartolt,
became particularly interested in music, and you went to the conservatoire at quite a young age, in your mid-teens, to study the cello.
I was not that young, you know. I was 15 when I started to study the cello. I played the piano a bit before.
Right.
I got some piano lessons, I think, in 52. And then I went to the conservatory. First year to study piano, in fact. Then 1 year later, I had enough of schools, you know. I'm a school hater. I always was a school hater. So I quit school and I just started to play the cello.
I'm getting the picture that a seed had been sown, perhaps for old music.
Yeah, I heard once on the radio, I heard some very beautiful music. And I think it was Orlando Gibbons, played by August Wenzinger and his Schola Canto Basiliensis. And that was an eye-opener for me. In fact, the first contact with early music, so to say early music, whatever you call early music. We started to look for music for that kind of instruments, and so it went on and on and on and on, yeah. After that, we went to the Jugendhof Steinbach again, because there were also some courses of how to play the instrument. And there's some people gave instructions, you know, how to hold the bow and so on and so on and so on, yeah. But I never got real gamba lessons.
Do you regard yourself as self-taught?
Yes, but I listen to people. I listen to people giving me some kind of information. You can't find everything yourself. But I think the whole thing about knowledge, about early music and so, it helps. But for me, still the most important thing is to play. Being between the score and the ears of the listeners.
Thank you.
Music for two viols from Le Rapport, one of the concerts for two equal viols by Jean de Sainte-Colombe, played by Wieland Koken and Asako Morikawa. Let's talk about the repertoire for the viol, the different schools of viol playing. I mean, there's a very definite English tradition, particularly the consort repertoire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But would I be exaggerating if I were to guess that for you, the French repertoire is the most precious?
Well, the most precious, it's difficult to say. I like the English solo repertoire also, like Christopher Simpson, and so I really like to play that, and I do a lot.
Well, by the time the music from your concert last night mm-hmm. was really taking over France, the viol in England was almost
gone
out of fashion. Yeah. Purcell had a last salute with his fantasias in the 1680s.
He didn't like the viols that much. Huh? He said music for insects or things, the lutes, and didn't sound enough. He was young.
Yes, he never grew to be old. Yeah. But the French school...
The French school, in fact, came also from England. The first well-known gamba player in France was Mogart. He didn't write any music. He was a great improviser. He learned it in England. And then he went also to Italy, and there's a nice testimony about... He heard Frescobaldi improvise in Rome. And he wrote a text about it. He said it was so beautiful, and so on and so on. Yeah.
And so that's the beginning of the French style?
That's, in fact, the beginning of the French solo playing, imitating the division playing of the English. And then we have next a few known people like Dubuisson. And then you get to Sainte-Colombe, who was much more very famous at his moment. Nobody knows a lot about him, but he's very famous, and the great French players after him were all saying that they were students of Sainte-Colombe.
Everyone
Marais,
wanted to say.
Marais, Fauquet, and so on. Yeah.
What do you think, talking of two composers who are represented in your recital, what do you think of the saying that Marais played like an angel, and Fauqueray like a devil?
Well, you know, it's a much later expression. I think it's from Hubert Leblanc.
It's not contemporary with them?
Not completely. But
is there a grain of truth
but
in
you
it?
Can see it in the music also. Well, some of the Fauqueray is very sweet and nice, like the slow movement I played yesterday, La Duvaucelle. That's very sweet and very nice.
Yes, it's not always devilish.
No, not at all. No. It's very well written. And it's Marais is a quite different character. The thing that Marais I like very much is he can write simple music very deeply and always interesting. Even in a little minuet, you know, you will always have some hint of something special. One moment of the ah.
Yes, I think everybody last night was very moved by Le Tombeau.
Yeah.
It's really deep emotion.
Deep peace.
Thank you.
Another pièce de viol by Marin Marais, that was the touching Tombeau de Monsieur Meliton. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, in conversation with Wieland Kauken after his recital in the 2013 York Early Music Festival. I've also been reading, you've mentioned that it's possible to play in an over-baroque style.
Did I ever say something intelligent like that?
You did. Well, and I want you to elaborate on it. What does that mean?
It's not only for baroque, it's in every style they can overdo things. If you go too far in extra things, then, in my opinion, you lose expression a lot. You know, if you have an old instrument, my instrument is from 1705 or something, French original, and you can't overdo it. There are limits.
What about ornamentation?
That's why I was very much interested by the French, because the notation is so perfect. Explanation is perfect, everything. They speak about bow technique and so on, much more than before. You know, like Marais and Fauquier, they give even fingerings and bow strokes. Everything is fixed. You can add some ornaments, and they do themselves, but not that much. I say everything is possible, but you're responsible for what you do. The performer, the power we have, so to say, it's a bad word, it's not nice to say that, but it's to make people feeling things. If you spoil it, that's it.
It's a good power.
I hope so.
If you use it well.
That's the thing I did all my life. I tried. Thank you.
La Tronchin from Antoine Forqueray's Pieces for Viol of 1747. Wieland, it struck me last night listening to the concert that that particular French repertoire, although it was over many years from the 1680s to the 1740s through several composers, that there was no such thing as early music.
No.
In those days, everything was contemporary
music. Of course, but now there should not be something like early music. There should be only good music or bad music even. But why early music? Why it becomes something...
Do you think it's time to abandon that term?
No, it's not. It's time to speak in a different way about it, I think. That's what I meant also with overdoing things, with styles and so
on. Yes.
When you get away from the music, you know, from expression, then... Well.
How much do you find returning to repertoire that you obviously know very well and love, how much do you find, for example, last night on a warm summer's night in a modern concert hall in York, that you suddenly feel moved to make a change in the usual way?
I was never in York before.
Oh, really?
I like the hall. The sound is very beautiful. I don't think the hall is very inspiring to look at.
No.
But the sound is so nice. The sound is uncomplicated and even and very nice and warm.
And did you enjoy the response of your audience?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, if you play not too bad, then the audience most of the time likes it.
Thank you.
Wieland Koken with Asako Morikawa and Terence Charleston playing the prelude, gavotte and gigue from François Couperin's collection Pieces for Viols with Figured Bass, published in 1728. Another thing to ask you, Wieland Koken, if you had your career all over again, is there anything you would do differently?
I don't know. It's a utopia. Yeah? I feel quite lucky about my life. I was born maybe at the right moment, at the right place. And I always was lucky, you know. I have had very good people to play with. I played with Leonard and so, and the whole crew, the Dutch, and also with Alfred Deller. I liked a lot. And other people, you know. That was so easy, so nice.
Well, I think they'd say the same about you, so.
Yeah. Well, no, I was lucky. And I feel happy about it. So why should I change next time? Thank you.
Hasakai Ushakon from Suite No. 1 by François Couperin. The performers were Terence Charleston, Asako Morikawa and Wieland Kuyken, who were speaking to Catherine Bott in today's Early Music Show. Well, at 3 o'clock this afternoon, we'll be going live to Cadogan Hall in London for the Proms Saturday matinee, celebrating Benjamin Britten's music. The programme will end with Britten's Serenade for Tenor Horn and Strings. Before that, a new piece, a BBC commission by Tansy Davis and John Woolrich, Variations on an Elizabethan Theme. And that's at 3 o'clock this afternoon. But now it's time for today's Proms Chamber Music Concert, recorded last Monday at Cadogan Hall, where the London Concord Ensemble gave the Proms premiere of a quartet by Imogen Holst. And the Radio 3 New Generation artist Robin Trichler performed a setting of William Yeats' words by Peter Warlock. But we start in Paris in 1932 with music by Poulenc, that musical clown of the First Order, as he was once described. Wind instruments can easily be rakish, comic, caustic, cynical, brash or romantic, and such a variety of potential moods well suited Poulenc, who made good use of many of them in his sextet for piano and winds. Right from the start, there's an angular jazziness mixed with something almost bleak, certainly emotionally intense. Perhaps this reflects Poulenc's mood, mourning a close childhood friend who died just before he started work on the piece. Piano joins flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon and horn in Poulenc's sextet, and here to play it is the London Concord Ensemble.